In episode 141 of the Guitar Music Theory podcast, I answer questions about chord recognition, chord fills, sharps in a circle of fifths, learning songs, and more. Greetings, guitar engineers. Welcome to the Guitar Music Theory podcast. I am your host, Desi Cerna, and today I'll be answering more listener questions. I've got questions about chord recognition, chord fills, the song Halfway Gone by Lifehouse, online versus in-person lessons, purchasing a looper pedal, sharps and a circle of fifths, playing faster on an Ibanez guitar, flat sevenths, learning songs, and more. As always, it's going to be a great discussion, but before I get started, I want to invite you to visit my website, guitarmusictheory.com. Answer the question I ask you about your playing, and I'll send you free custom video instruction that is calibrated to your current level. If you need help determining what you should specifically be working on now to become a better guitar player, I can put you on a plan to fill gaps in your knowledge and fill gaps in your playing so you can move forward and reach your music goals. Whether you're a beginner still needing to learn the basics, or you need help with finger picking, bar chords, guitar soloing, or you want to delve deeply into music theory, I have a free video course for you. Enroll now at guitarmusictheory.com. You can click on the link in the podcast show notes. All right, so we are ready to dive into our first question. It comes from Pete, and he says, I was wondering if you had any suggestions for ways to work on chord recognition within a key for the different scale degrees. I feel like this should be easy for me at this point, but I've never really gotten good at it, and whatever apps I've used to help with it seems to make it worse somehow. He goes on, any suggestions for how to improve on it with regular practice? Ideally, I'd like to be able to listen to something and know if it's going to the 4 or 5, which I am still confused about often, or whether I'm going to the relative minor versus the 2 or 3 chord, or even better, being able to recognize more easily the chords that are out of the key. I just really want to get this solidified in my head for faster picking up of covers and also for knowing where a melody I'm writing is going harmonically, if that makes any sense. Yes, it makes perfect sense, Pete. What's helped me the most is playing songs. So what you do is you just start with some simple songs that have some simple chord movement, learn the chord movement, and then as you play it, call those numbers out by ear and even sing them in pitch if you can. And then the more that you play through common progressions and play along with songs, the more you're going to just ingrain that in your ear. So I'll give you some suggestions. And I'm going to suggest that you play along with songs. I think the reason why sometimes the apps don't work is because they're giving you tones that are like from a piano or a keyboard or maybe electronically generated. And when you get to the guitar, you're not recognizing those pitches. Personally for me, I found that some of those apps weren't helpful because I actually recognize the sound of a guitar. So it's like if you play an electronically generated E pitch for me, I may not necessarily recognize it as E. But if I hear this, I immediately go, oh, that's got to be E. That sounds like an open E major chord voicing. Or even if I hear something like this, I'm like, oh, that sounds like the open first and second string. That must be E, B. And so on, even with, you know, some fretted notes, there's something about me hearing the guitar where I recognize what that is and where that's played. I'm like, oh, that's a C or that's an E, and so on. But anyway, I'm logged into the video version of Fretboard Theory, but if you have a book, you could turn to Fretboard Theory, the first volume, the Red Book, Chapter 6, and this is where I teach chord progressions and playing by numbers. And once I explain how you harmonize the scale and you get that numbered sequence of chords, for example, if you're in the key of G, you know, where you make triads. I'm not going to get all into that, but I explain it in the book and in the video series. Then I give you lists of familiar songs that are based on real typical chord progressions. And the idea is that you would listen to those songs and then you could call them out. You could be like, oh, I hear it. That's one, that's four, that's five. And you could strum along just the basic chords. You don't need to actually worry about learning those songs. So if you have the video version, you scroll down beneath the video and I've got some highlighted links there and some a bunch of song lists. So for example, when I get you started on 1-4-5 chord progressions, I have Stirred Up by Bob Marley here as an example. And I don't want the copyright police to come after me. And actually, this is not even, I don't have this connected to my recording software. You're gonna hear this bleed into my vocal mic. But here's Bob Marley, Stir It Up. It's in the key of A and it uses 1-4-5, it repeats 1-4-5. So you're in the key of A. So you can play that, but then you can say it. 1-4-5, but actually say it in pitch. 1-4-5. 1-4-5-1. Then maybe see if you can do it without playing it. 4-5-1. Can you hum along with the song? 1-4-5-1, and so on. Let's go to some other songs on my list here. You know, Twist and Shout. You can play the Beatles version or the original Isley Brothers version. That's an F. That's 1-4-5, 1-4-5, 1-4-5. Or if you do it the Beatles version, it's in D. 1-4-5, 1-4-5. That's what I do. And I'm calling it out by number in pitch as I play it. And then I like to do that with the music as well. I'll play with the music and call out in pitch, and then sometimes I stop playing, and I'm just calling it out by pitch. And I do this when I'm listening to music. So if I'm in the car, and you know something like Baba O'Reilly comes on by The Who, and I hear the guitar come in and go. I go 1-5-4, 1-5-4. The more you do this, you start to get used to it, and your ear starts to hear it, and you get to that point where you start to recognize the movement, and you can pick it out by ear quickly. Sometimes you'll go from 1 up to 4, and sometimes you go from 1 down to 4. So if I'm using Baba O'Reilly here, I could go from F down here. Or excuse me, we're like 1-4 or 1-5. So F to B flat, that's 1-4, 1-4. Or if I take the F up an octave, 1, and then go to that same B flat, 4, 1, 4. Or F to C is 1-5. 1-5, 1-5. Or up here, 1-5, 1-5, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4, 1-5, 4 going, you know, maybe something like Brown Eyed Girl. So that's in G, and it's 1-4-1. What if it were in the key of A? Can I do it without playing? 1-4-1-5. 1-4-1-5. So that's how I do it. Keep it simple. Maybe you just focus on a 1-4 chord change. Find some songs that use a 1-4 chord change and sing along and play along with it. Then find songs that do like a 1-5 chord change, you know, like Achy Breaky Heart, you know. So 1-5, if you can't go that low, 1-5, you can go up to 5. That whole song is 1-5. Something like, is there a song where the whole song is 1-4? Maybe something like Feeling All Right, you know? I may not be in the right key, but I think Feeling All Right is 1-4. Just hum along with it. Then you can work in the minor chords. So on my list here, I've got a hyperlink where you can pull up Cherry Bomb and listen to that. This is actually a track. It's not the original song, but John Mellencamp. This is 1-2 chord. 1-2. You know, I didn't mention solfege, you know, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Some people might think do, re, do, re, do, re. And if they're doing 1-4-5, they think do, re, mi, fa, sol, do, fa, sol. I don't like to use solfege. It's never been how I was trained, or I prefer to just use numbers. Because if I use solfege, then I have to say, what's sol again? Oh, sol is 5. I just prefer to go 1-4-1-5 or 1-2. But if you like solfege, you know, you can use it. But it just takes time. You have to play this stuff. You need to feel the vibrations in your fingers, and that needs to travel to your brain and your ear. You need to feel the vibrations coming out of your throat as you're saying 1-2-3-4. And it will all connect in your brain, and then you'll start to recognize it. And, you know, you might be listening to, what else is on my list here? Jack Johnson's song, Upside Down, you know. I want to turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I'll find with. So anyway, so that's 1-2-4-5. And if a song is a relatively simple progression and I'm just listening to the radio as I'm driving or something, I usually like to see if I can just figure it out, you know. 1-4-5-6. Maybe the 6 is in there. 1-5-6-4-1-5-6-4. Those are extremely common progressions in pop music today. A combination of 1-4-5 and 6. When things start to get a little crazy and there's a lot of movement, I just listen to the song and enjoy it. I don't really try to train my ear all the time that I'm listening to music. But if it's relatively simple, I enjoy that. It's kind of fun, and I am able to do that. And in terms of chords that aren't in the key, you know, just follow the fretboard theory program. Eventually, I introduce modal interchange and borrowed chords. So, you know, you might be you know, playing in the key of E, and you might have maybe something like, what was I going to do? Yeah, something like that. So 1 flat 7. So I recognize that's a flat 7. 1 flat 7 4 5. 1 flat 7 4 5 1 flat 7 4 5. Living After Midnight. So as you start to get introduced to those types of borrowed chords and that modal mixture and stuff, you can kind of play the same little game. We are moving on to the next question. It comes from Michael, and he says, I'm trying to play musically around and within a simple chord progression as a solo fingerstyle guitarist. I'm desiring to freely add melody, harmony, chord fragments, and so on to my playing. What do I need to do? Michael, what you need to do is you need to have a song repertoire. So the more songs that you learn that are played in the style that you describe, then the more ideas you have to play with on your own. You can take those ideas and repurpose them over your own playing or improvisations, or maybe over other songs that you're playing other songs, but you want to add some of those techniques in there. So I don't have a particular course that teaches this specifically. It's certainly something that I could walk you through in a private lesson. You could just go to guitarmusictheory.com and click on the private lesson link. We can connect on Zoom. And if you have a couple of ideas of songs that are played in this manner, let's put them on. Let me help you learn a couple of parts from those songs, and then I'll take you through the process of repurposing them over other things. So I'd really kind of need to hear specifically what kind of music you have in mind in order to do that. But let me just give my listeners kind of an example here. He mentioned acoustic guitar. What I'm playing an electric guitar, but whatever. The same concept works here. So the first thing that came to my mind when he said fingerstyle acoustic guitars, I thought of James Taylor. So, you know, think about his song Fire and Rain, which is something like... Something like that. I actually have a lesson on this that I did years ago on YouTube if you want to learn that. And I play it much better than I play it here. So there's a couple of little things in there. Like I like how it goes to the D, you know. And then when it goes to the A. So I'm playing with a capo here. It's like, right, let me take it off. So let's just, you know, you learn little pieces like that from songs, and then you figure out, well, how can I use those ideas in other things? So, you know, let's say I'm playing something like Free Falling. D, G, G, D. Well, actually, Free Falling is capoed. Whatever, it doesn't matter. We're just using this as an example. So I might do something like, you know, so I'm just messing around here. The first kind of the first thing that came to my mind. So if I actually was playing some version of Free Falling or some version of Song Song that was in that key with those chords, and I did that, I think, Michael, you would listen to that and say, oh, that's cool. I like how you just kind of improvised some little movement there and added in you know, some chord fragments and some little chord extensions and Philly stuff. Like, well, how did you get that idea? I took it directly. I learned it from James Taylor's Fire and Rain. So you got to learn songs that have the style that you're interested in, and then take parts from those songs and learn how to repurpose it over other things. So you could do this on electric as well. I get people that ask me this, like, how can I play rhythm guitar styles and, like, you know, do Philly rhythm stuff? Well, think about songs that have Philly rhythm stuff. You know, I would think of Little Wing by Hendrix or Stevie Ray Vaughan, either version. like on that G chord. Really nice Philly stuff there. Okay, so let's say I'm playing something in G. What's a song that's in G? How about Sitting in the Morning Sun? Okay, Sitting in the Dock of the Bay. That's the first song I thought of. All right, so I want to do my own little version of it with some Philly stuff. So instead of just going, maybe I go, oh, okay. So yeah, now I've got some cool ideas there and I'm feeling it. Where did those ideas come from? I learned them from Little Wing, and then I'm repurposing them over this song in G. So that's how the basic concept works. If you need some help with it, this is something I could walk you through in a private Zoom lesson, and just have some ideas prepared. You know, just play a couple things for me and say, hey, I really love the style, the rhythm guitar style, and this song, let's learn some of these parts. And we'd kind of just spend, you know, 45 minutes or so just experimenting with different ways we could repurpose it. You can record the session if you want on Zoom so you can review it later. And I think that'll really just kind of get you started in the direction that you want to go with this. We are moving on to our next question. This comes from Steve, and he says, Desi, I would like to ask if you could feature the song Halfway Gone by the band Lifehouse in one of your How Does This Song Work episodes. The song has a neat sound, and it would be interesting to hear your take on what's going on and with the chord progressions. Thanks for all your podcasts and videos. They are very informative and have helped me a ton. Let's listen to it. Here's a little bit of Halfway Gone by Lifehouse. Halfway gone, I'm halfway gone. You are always hard to hold. We got... So letting go ain't easy. Okay, this is kind of cool. This is based on what we were talking about earlier with the chord progressions. This is number stuff here. But I can tell they're doing something a little bit different. Hanging on, growing cold. While my mind is leaving town. Talk is cheap, give me a word you can keep. Oh, hear that right there? Okay, did you hear that? So, I immediately recognize that. That's got to be an open E major chord there. If I had heard just an electronically generated E pitch, I may not have recognized it. That's why I don't always like the apps. But when I listen to music, I can tell, oh, they're in the key of E. So if I come back to the beginning here, halfway gone, I'm halfway gone. Okay. Stop it. So I could tell I'm in E. 5, 6, 7, 1, and it was 6, 4, 1, 5. But they weren't playing like stock standard chords. It sounded like they were just playing intervals, like a root and third, root and minor third for that 6 chord, and then root and major third for the 4 chord. Same thing for the 1 chord. And then the 5 chord. Actually. Okay, and the 5 chord, they played its 3rd and 5th. They played a first inversion of it. So it's something like. All out of the E scale. I don't have time to go through this whole song. Maybe I will feature it. I'll make note of it. And how does this song work? It is a cool sound. And I like that it's based on very common chord movement, straight out of the major scale, but they did something a little bit different by playing intervals. I don't know if that's one guitar playing those intervals or if they double-tracked guitars. So one guitar was going... the other guitar was going. done that too. You know, if I never get to this and how does this song work, this is something that we can do in a private lesson, Steve, or anyone that's listening. If you like that series and there's a particular song that you would like to have a little breakdown, book a private lesson. That's why I'm here, people. Let's go through it together. And, you know, even if tablature is available for songs, tablature will tell you where to put your fingers and stuff, but it's still helpful to have someone like me that can actually explain, like, hey, okay, this is the key you're in, this is why you're playing it this way. And I think that's what people like about my How Does This Song Work videos. So we could do that with any song. Email me first and let me know what song you're interested in. So let me just make sure that I can do it justice and I can definitely help you out. You know, if you send me a bebop jazz song, I'm going to decline. That's not my area of expertise, and I wouldn't be able to help you with that. But with a song like this, I'm not saying I would walk you through and teach it to you note for note in one lesson, but we may not need to do that. I can pretty quickly figure out the basic parts and just explain the key and the chord movement and the scales and all that interesting stuff, particularly if you're a student of fretboard theory or guitar theory for dummies and you're wanting to learn how to apply that to some particular songs that are not one of the songs that I referenced in one of those books. We can do that as a private lesson, in a private lesson. Just go to the website, peopleguitarmusictheory.com, click on that link to book a private lesson. Moving on, as they say in the northern Midwest, where I am originally from. Nicholas from Germany says, Desi, I'm working my way through your classes, and sometimes I hear from other students or teachers that it's better to take face-to-face lessons. What do you think? Are private lessons in addition to video lessons necessary, or will it be confusing? He's not talking about other people in my classes. He's saying he's enrolled in one of my video courses, but as he talks to other guitar teachers and other people who are learning how to play guitar, they say you shouldn't do that. You should take face-to-face lessons. So he's asking, what's better? Should you do both? Are they necessary? Will it be confusing? So I answered him and basically said, you know, you can have good and bad experiences with in-person or online lessons. So you really just need to explore your options and see what works best for you. My students are doing really well in the courses that I've created. Plus, I am available to do lessons through Zoom on occasion if you need some personalized help. So I replied to Nicholas's email and gave him an answer, and then this is his reply. He said, thank you for your answer. I really feel like I am making progress. I am doing the bar chord class of yours right now. People from the traditional world of personal lessons always try to tell you that there's only one way to go. I've had personal lessons before that didn't work for me, and your lessons have gotten me farther than I have ever imagined I could go. I'll just keep going. Thanks again. Well, there's your answer then, Nicholas, and there's your answer to, you know, other people. If the online course, if you're making progress, then it's the right thing for you to do. Keep in mind that I taught in-person lessons for years and years, many, many, many thousands of lessons. So when I sat down to make my courses, I know exactly what it's like to sit across from a student. I know the things you're going to struggle with. I know the questions you're going to ask. I know what you're going to need to practice. So I walk you through that. A lot of people comment and they say, I feel like you're in the room with me, and I feel like you're just talking to me directly. And so any of you that maybe are on the fence about enrolling in a particular course of mine, give it a shot. It may be exactly what you need. It may work out really well for you. If you can then also take some in-person lessons with someone just to get some extra help, go for it. Or maybe you have a guitar playing friend or something you can just kind of get together with just to get some personalized tips or something. Or maybe you want to connect with me on occasion through Zoom because maybe you've got some questions that I didn't answer in the courses or questions about other things or whatever. So enough about that, and we are going to move on. This is actually someone on YouTube that had commented on one of my videos, and he says, can you advise me which looper pedal to buy? So I talk about using a guitar looper pedal, and I have some videos. If you go to my YouTube channel or my Facebook, just search Desi Serna Guitar loop or looper. Let's see what happens when you do that. I'm going to go to Google and search Desi Cerna guitar loop. And then I've got a video how to use a guitar looper pedal. I've got a video on how to loop Getting Jiggy With It. And that's pretty cool. You want to see what I do with that? I'm actually going to go to the video results here because I also have a video. Why is it not? Oh, yes, I got a video, How to Guitar Loop Exodus by Bob Marley. That's really cool, too. I was really happy with how that came out. I should do more of those. If you think I need to do a whole series on fun little songs to loop and show you how to loop them, let me know. Actually, it might be a great course to do, a paid course where I provide you with tab and everything. Go to the website, shoot me an email, or just respond to any email if you're already on my email list, if you're interested in that. But I do get this question. People are like, which looper pedal should I buy? The answer is just get a basic one. Let me see. I'm going to Sweetwater guitar looper pedal. And then I'm going to sort the results from price low to high. Show me the cheapest one. Here is the TC Electronic Ditto. It's called the Ditto Looper. It's got one foot switch, one knob for the looper level, an input and an output. It's $99. It's got great reviews. I've actually used this one before. It's super. It's simple. And, you hit the foot switch to record. You hit it again to play back. I think you double tap if you want to clear it out or something like that. Just double check the manual. A great way just to get started and keep it simple and see if you enjoy looping. And if you do, then maybe you want more options or something. You might spend a little bit more and get like the Boss Loop Station. They have different models. Some of them have multiple pedals, but you might just get the single pedal version. And I think the Loop Station, some of these versions, some of these loopers, you can set a metronome so that you don't have to be as precise about the start and the stop of your looper. So if you, I hope I'm telling this to you accurately. If you hit it, it's going to automatically adjust that to the nearest beat. And then if it's, I think you might even be able to set it to like 4-bar phrases or 8-bar phrases. I probably should have looked this up before I started talking about it. But sometimes that's helpful for people because they struggle with a completely manual loop, getting the timing of it right, where they start it and stop it at the perfect time so that they have a seamless loop. And so if you're doing it along with a little drum beat or a metronome that's in there, that helps as a guide, but then it'll also like it will shift and it'll quantize it to that beat. So you might look at some of the little bit more pricier loopers if you think you might want that option. But really, the best thing to do is just get a pedal and just start playing around with it, and you'll figure out how much you like it and how elaborate you want your loops to be. And then you can figure out if you actually might want to invest in like a looper pedal that's got multiple pedals so you can add different layers and then you can mute tracks and do crazy stuff with it. I experimented with some of that in the past and had some fun with it, but I generally just like to keep it kind of simple now when I do my loops. But anyway, that's all I'm going to say about that.
Hi, I'm Chris Gethard, and I'm very excited to tell you about Beautiful Anonymous, a podcast where I talk to random people on the phone. I tweet out a phone number, thousands of people try to call, I talk to one of them, they stay anonymous, I can't hang up, that's all the rules. I never know what's going to happen. We get serious ones. I've talked with meth dealers on their way to prison, I've talked to people who survived mass shootings, crazy funny ones, I talked to a guy with a goose laugh, somebody who dresses up as a pirate on the weekends. I never know what's going to happen. It's a great show. Subscribe today, Beautiful Anonymous.
Next, Jimmy says, Desi, I'm looking for the guitar transcription to the song Just Be Good to Me by the SOS Band. So I was not familiar with this song. It's like an electronic poppy sort of song thing. And I don't even know if there's any guitar in here, so I don't know why you would find guitar tab for it. Yeah, I don't even know if there's any guitar in there. So, Jimmy, you're not going to find guitar tab because I don't think there's any guitar in here. Maybe I skipped over. Was there a little guitar solo or something that came in? I'm not sure. You know, you're not likely to find guitar tab for songs that A, don't have guitar in them, or B, have guitar in them, but they're just not popular enough that a publisher is going to get a return on the investment they make by creating the guitar tab, because not many people are going to buy it or are interested in it. That said, I didn't mean to be promoting my Zoom lessons this much in the podcast, but this is something I could help you with in a private lesson. So if you want to figure out the basic chords and changes here and how you might play it on a guitar or something, I can walk you through that. Just go to the website, hit the link, guitarmusictheory.com, hit the link for private lesson, and I'll go through and I'll work out something for you. Moving on. Russ sent me this message. He said, if you know the key of A has three sharps, F sharp, C sharp, and C sharp, then you don't need to read this. Your students might need to read this, and they might like to see what I've come up with here. You need paper and a pencil to understand where I'm going with this. Going around the circle of fifths, when you draw a C, it reminds me of a zero, and the key of C has zero sharps. What Russ has put together here or found online and shared with me, I'm not sure, is his way to remember how many sharps are in each key. Let's go through it and let's see if anyone finds this interesting. So he says that when you draw a C, if you have a pencil in your hand and you draw a C, it reminds him of a zero, and C has zero sharps. When you draw a G, G can be, when you draw a six, it looks like a G. It takes one stroke of the pencil and the key of G has one sharp. If you draw a D, it takes two strokes of your pencil, one, two, and D has two sharps. If you draw an A, one, two, three, it takes three strokes of a pencil and it has three sharps. E takes four strokes of a pencil, it has four sharps. He says, I cheat on B. I start with an E, and then I add a squiggly on the right to complete the B, and that ends up being five strokes of the pencil and five sharps. Oh, gosh. So he goes on, and do I really want to read all of this? So, and then he asked me, have you ever heard of this? So, here's my answer. If you find this sort of thing interesting, and it is kind of interesting mathematically how this sort of works out, good for you. I don't want to spoil any of your fun. Personally, I don't really find value in this sort of thing. I don't really think about the circle of fifths, not in terms of key signatures. I don't think about it that much. Most guitar players don't. I'm not saying is that the key signatures in the circle of fifths in general couldn't be useful, but this idea of trying to come up with these memory tricks to remember how many sharps are in each key, that's just not the way I think and it's not the way I play. Since the fretboard is essentially a grid, I rely on shapes and patterns plus the number system. So if you ask me, Desi, what's the first thing you think about when you think about playing the key of D? Boom, I think a D major chord. I think my D major scale pattern, and I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then I think about all the songs that I play in D. I don't think about the circle of fifths or key signatures. I'm not thinking about flats and sharps. I mean, if I have to, I'm like, oh, well, I have, you know, D, E, F sharp, D, E, F sharp, G, A, B, C sharp. Okay, F sharp and C sharp. I mean, I know it's there because I know it's part of the scale and the number, but I just don't think that way. And as someone who's a guitar player that wants to really learn how to play music on the fretboard and navigate the fretboard, that's also what my teaching emphasizes. So I generally don't teach reading standard musical notation or thinking of music from that perspective. I do teach the circle of fifths, but not as a means to understand like how key signatures work mathematically. I teach it because of the chord movement that is used when you play fifth movement. So you can understand songs like Hey Joe. C to G is a fifth. G to D is a fifth. D to A is a fifth. A to E is a fifth. It's following like the circle of fifths. And I teach you how to think of that in terms of chord movement on the fretboard and what that looks like. So, you know, that's my thing. Again, if you're someone that finds standard musical notation interesting or helpful and you like to explore these little mathematical puzzles and stuff, I don't want to spoil your fun. It's just not how I think and it's just not how I teach. All right. So now Russ hates me because I just poo-pooed on his idea. Love you, Russ. Thank you for sharing that, actually. And if you're listening, thank you for listening. Next question, a couple questions come from Henrik. And he asks, first question, I'm playing a Fender Stratocaster player series today, and I'm considering buying an Ibanez, mainly because I've heard that the thinner neck makes it easier to play faster. What's your take on that? Any particular model you would recommend? I haven't played an Ibanez guitar recently, but from what I remember, I don't think I liked how flat the fingerboard radiuses are. But you may love it. Some people like that, some people don't. I wouldn't say that one makes you play faster than the other, but you might one might feel more comfortable to a certain player, and so since they're more comfortable, they play a little better and play a little faster, I guess, if that's your goal. A lot of the people that are into like shred style guitar and, you know, trying to play rapidly through scale patterns and stuff, oftentimes maybe like a flatter fretboard radius, but not always, you know. It's just a personal opinion. So yeah, I mean, you just need to try them out for yourself, Henrik. You know, go to a guitar store and try out different guitars with different fretboard radiuses. And same is true with like neck size and thickness and the neck shape and everything. Some people like a thick neck, like a baseball bat, and they're just more comfortable with that. And some people like a thinner neck, or some people like a particular shape. Some people like a flat radius. Some people like a really rounded vintage radius, like on a vintage Stratocaster or something. So I'm comfortable playing on a variety of necks as long as they're not too far out of the normal range. If you asked me, Desi, what is your favorite type of neck or neck of all time, I would actually probably pick the PRS DGT. So the Paul Reed Smith DGT, that's a David Grissom model, I think has the most perfect guitar neck on it. I love the size and the radius and the thickness and the shape. I'm actually, right now I'm playing a PRS McCarty 594, and it's got, I think this has got a flatter fingerboard radius, or I think it's got a compound radius, and it feels a little thick. It feels definitely feels thicker and chunkier in my hand. It even has the neck shape on the back is, what's the right word here? It's like an oblong shape. It's like, it's got more of a cut on one side than the other. Anyway, I don't have any trouble playing on this guitar, and I love it. It's a great guitar, and I love it. Personally, I would prefer if this guitar had the shape and the size of the DGT, but whatever. I've got other guitars here that are a little different from the DGT, and I still love them, and they sound great. I love my Stratocaster guitar and my Telecaster, but I guess if you held a gun to my head and said, Desi, in your personal opinion, what is your favorite neck size and shape? I would say whatever the PRS DGT is. Looks like I've got time for one more question. It comes from Tom, and he says, Desi, you mentioned that a guitarist should learn songs first. I'm a cellist that started the guitar about 6 months ago. My focus has been to learn bar chords, open chords, all the scales, music theory, notes on the fretboard, picking, finger picking, etc. I have learned a couple of songs. My main issue is chord transitions. Why do you say I should learn a lot of songs first? And then he says, also, no one can give me a good answer on this. Why are the triads of the natural minor scale named something different from the major scale? I think the seventh on the natural minor is called the flat seventh. For A minor, it's just a G major triad, right? It's composed of the same notes as the five chord in C major. All right, so two questions here. The first one about why do I say learn songs? So I tell you to learn songs, Tom, because the first thing you need to do is get your general playing skills in order. Until you do that, you're not really going to be able to apply any of the theory that you might be learning. So, and also, like, what good is it to know things if you can't actually pick up your guitar and play some actual music? So I've got free instruction on the website to help you. Check out the Beginner 101 course, and I'll teach you the basics, and I'll show you how to start strumming along with some super simple songs. Because you said your main issue is chord transitions. Exactly. Like, that's the whole challenge when you're playing guitar, is getting your fingers to move on time so that you can strum some songs and you can keep time and you can keep up with the song, or you can make music. So there's no sense learning a bunch of theory until you can do that. And there's no sense learning a bunch of techniques that you're not even ready for. You got to start with the basics and then gradually learn how to play more and more music, and that'll introduce more technique. And then eventually you can learn some theory. It is good to know, instead of just memorizing something, it's good to kind of know, what is this chord movement? What is this key? What scale are you in? That can actually be very helpful. But in the beginning stages, man, you just got to learn how to play something first and just learn how to use your hands on the guitar. And then the second question, why is G called a flat seven in A minor when it's really just the fifth in the key of C, and A minor is relative to C? It's because when you're in the key of A minor, A is your tonic pitch. And so if you start counting from your tonic pitch, which you should do, then G is actually the seventh. And it's actually a half step lower than a major seventh, which occurs in the major scale, so it's called a flat seventh. Anyway, you might be getting a little ahead of yourself on this theory stuff. Theory is great to learn. I write books about it. I got video courses. I'm talking about it in this podcast. But if you're a beginner guitar player, you don't need theory. You got to learn how to just pick up your guitar and learn the basics and start to condition your hands and be able to just play some simple songs. So I can help you with that. Just go to guitarmusictheory.com and enroll in a free video course. All right, podcast 141 is a wrap. If you have any questions you would like to submit for future Q&A episodes, just go to my website, guitarmusictheory.com, scroll down, and you'll find the contact link, and you can submit your question there. Or if you're already on my email list, you can reply to any email you receive. If you have not yet enrolled in a free video course at my website, be sure to go there, answer the question I ask you about your playing, and I'll send you free custom video instruction that is calibrated to your current level. Let me help put you on a plan so you can move forward, reach your music goals, and become a better guitar player. Go to guitarmusictheory.com now to enroll in your free course. You can click on the link in the podcast show notes. And don't forget that you can find my books, including Fretboard Theory, Guitar Theory for Dummies, Guitar Rhythm and Technique for Dummies, Guitar Picking Mechanics, and more at Amazon.com. And let me extend a special thank you to all of my listeners who have purchased books and video courses from me. Your support is what enables me to continue to produce this free content. If you're a listener who would like to support this podcast, you can purchase one of my books or video courses from Amazon, my website, or you can also click on the donation link on my website, and you can support me that way. I hope you would choose to do something today so that we can keep this good thing that we have going. All right, guitar engineers, thanks for listening. I'm Desi Cerna. Before you go, be sure to subscribe to this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, and leave a great review if you can. Then keep playing and stay tuned for more.